All right. Welcome everyone back to the Barca for All podcast. It's been a minute. The last upload that we have on this was in like June 26th, I think. So a lot of things have transpired since that happened. Obviously, you know, there's the transfer market and the transfer window's open, but also a little thing called the Women's World Cup. But before we dive into that and all of the news with the club and transfers and World Cup performances and everything, let's catch up for a second. So how have you guys been doing? How's your past, I guess, almost like 2 months been?
I was going to say that not great, because currently in Spain, probably Kelsey experienced that because she was in Spain like 1 month ago, right?
Oh, Spain, funny story, I went to Spain. I went to Spain for 2 weeks, yeah.
So basically now there is like a big heat wave and I'm not quite okay. Like, I'm just happy that we are not recording with a camera, because now I'm currently topless because it's so fucking hot. Like, it's almost 40 degrees. So,
48?
So, yeah, not great. And also, no, 40 Celsius.
I know in the US. Still, that's what I mean. Like 104? Oh my God.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, like a lot. So yeah, and actually, being without Barcelona for 2 months doesn't make it better. So, yeah. But anyway, we are here to comment on the news of Barcelona and that tournament del demonio, which is called the World Cup.
And I've been doing it for the past 2 months, and actually I just escaped the heat wave. It was around 40 for me as well. That was during the May and June, but right now it's cold. It's a bit cold. The monsoon has set in, so yeah, I'm fine and the climate is fine.
I'm glad to hear you guys are surviving the heat. I will say, Europeans, when they tell you that there's no AC there, they're not joking at all. And I am not used to that. I learned something very valuable, though. From my understanding, the way that Spaniards perceive, like, AC isn't quite in the way that the French do, because I've been told that the French see it as, like, AC makes you sick. I don't think the Spanish see it that way, but how you can correct me, but I think they see it more as like our electricity and water taxes are 25%, which to me, as an American, that's crazy. Where I live, the electricity and water taxes are like 6%, which is nothing.
I would say that we are just overall poor, so we don't get AC. I mean, as a country. So anyway, even in Andalusia, which is even warmer than that here in Madrid, or Valencia, which is the place where I usually go, they don't use AC. Like, it's half of the population who use it. So yeah.
Which I was dying. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm very comfortable with my sedentary American lifestyle, sitting inside with the AC on like an 85 degree day. That's where I'm comfortable. So otherwise, Spain was nice. It was a nice country. But that's pretty much it for our catch up time. We have a lot of things to cover, but the main things we're going to start with today are the biggest club news surrounding transfers and things like that. The main thing with that is Nuria Rabano. She has officially left the club under a unilateral contract termination. I'm pretty sure it was just the decision of the club. I'm pretty sure that was confirmed by a couple journalists that, like, the club terminated her contract. And then she left the club, and now, I think a couple days ago, she signed for Wolfsburg. I gotta say, I gotta offer up my opinion here. I was devastated when this came out. I thought she was a very promising player. I thought she could have been maybe she could have even gotten to the starter level if she stayed here long enough, if she had gotten adjusted to the Barcelona system enough. In the limited minutes she did have this season, I thought she was promising. I thought she did well. And now our left back situation, I don't want to say it's grim because it's a little dramatic, but our left back situation right now is Rolfa, who is expected to undergo knee surgery after the World Cup. And then Ona Batie, who would be playing out of position more or less. And I don't know who else could cover. I guess Mapi? I don't know. But that's pretty much our left back situation after Ludia has left. So, your guys' thoughts? I'm curious.
And I just wanted to add to what you said, that that implies that Lucy Burns will play
again
back more often
for another season.
Devastating, right?
I hate it.
Again.
I hate it.
So excited.
Now,
I hate it.
I mean, I was mostly joking. Actually, we will leave in the World Cup, and we were talking previously off the record that, in my view, Lucy was not that great. But anyway, we're talking about Nuria Rabano. There are multiple reasons why I don't get to understand why Barcelona did it this way. Like, I guess it was a unilateral decision. So it was on the club's part. I mean, it was not like initially I thought that Nuria probably asked to leave because, I don't know, maybe she was homesick, she was missing her family, being Barcelona and Galicia relatively away. But no, in the end, it was just the club just end her contract. And I don't get to understand, because I agree with what you mentioned. I think her first season was not like bad. I mean, like the matches were in the second half of the season were relatively okay. I mean, like, we knew what she could do on the ball, and I was just expecting to be more powerful physically probably in the second season. And you could say that probably the wisest thing was to wait just one more season to see what she could deliver. So it was just, yeah, very confusing, because even if you don't trust on Nuria to develop physically, like you say, oh, okay, Barcelona feminist standards physically are of this level, Nuria will not get there. Why do you break her contract? Because currently Barcelona will have to pay some money, like a clause on the contract of Nuria to terminate her contract, or even to pay the rest of the year of the second year that she had on the contract. So in the end, is Barcelona lost money for a player which is attractive on the market, because we saw that Wolfsburg was willing to sign her. And you could ask, not even, I mean, You didn't even have to ask for a transfer. Just allow any other team to get her, and you didn't have to pay like the rest of the year or even that close. So it's even financially, it's a very odd decision, and I don't get to understand. And that's why I thought that the club will explain at some point, because it's really hard to understand. So yeah.
And I would like to add a couple of points to what Barca said. And I kind of feel like Jonathan wasn't able to figure out a position for her to get her more into the team. And the second part of it would be like Barca doesn't want to experience another situation like what they did with Emma Ramirez, to just have the player and doesn't play her for a season and a whole and waste an year. Maybe that could be another reason why they might have opted to end her contract in unilateral terms. And other than that, I don't feel there is anything wrong from the part of the player, because most of the time when Barca end the contract of the player, it's kind of inconclusive. We don't get to this. We never got an answer why they are ending the contracts in situations like this. So I think this has been happening for the past couple of seasons, and I don't think we will ever get an answer or an explanation why they are doing this. But I hope situations like this can be explained in the future, so that we could get to understand why this has been happening. and more so I would like to hear Jonathan's thoughts on this when we play our second preseason game, and if any of the journalists are allowed to ask a question about New Year's situation. So yeah, that's my thoughts around ending the contract of New Year.
See, well, Jonathan probably will have to explain in the very first press conference. I probably Markel will get away with that, at least for a few months, but probably Jonathan will be asked on the very first press conference or interview that he gives. There is something. There is also another reason why I think it's very odd is that she was told about leaving the club on late June, or even the first week of July. I mean, we don't know for sure, but the thing is that it was that very late on the season where most of the teams have already planned their team roster and probably, I don't know, I was thinking, I mean, probably she was lucky that Wolfsburg had still a empty one spot for her, but probably Real Sociedad would have been interested and they no longer have like any empty place for Nuria or any, I mean, like most of the teams are already done with planification. So it was just, if you get all all these comments that we have made, all of us, is makes it so odd that the only thing that makes me think that can explain the Nuria terminating her contract is that probably there are some reasons off the pitch that we don't know, and the sporting directive of Barcelona has to deal with, and that leads to this decision. Because I mean, from a sportive view, is very odd. From financial reasons, it cannot be explained. So yeah, I mean, like there is something very odd there that we don't know. On I mean, hopefully we will get to a point where we know, but yeah, not confident about that neither.
In other news, well, not other, but like in similar news, also while we were gone, I don't quite know if we talked about it on the last podcast, but also Emma Ramirez, she also left the club. She re-signed for Real Sociedad after coming back to Barcelona on a like senior contract, not a loan, or she came back from loan from Real Sociedad from the season before last. And then she came back and played, again, limited to no minutes. Throughout her season, she had issues with physical fitness, not so much injuries, but just baseline physical fitness that Yona talked about. So in addition to Nuria leaving, we also have another fullback leaving the club, who was very promising, that is also gone. And I would just like to look at this from a perspective of like squad planning in the future, because obviously, you know, we signed Ona and that's a huge deal because she is a world-class fullback and she's been proving it, you know, in the past couple years throughout Levante and Manchester United and even with Spain. But we are still bare in the fullback department. We don't have much depth there really at all. And we'll be talking about this later, but Esther Laborde, she also is gone. So that's another fullback that's gone. And it worries me how, I guess, insistent I would say the staff is on having so little depth in those positions. Because this isn't a new thing. I mean, throughout my 4 years being a dedicated fan of Barcelona women, we have not had really any like world-class fullback depth in either position. Because Torre has been great, but I wouldn't say that she's been world-class. So now that we have Ona, it's like, well, where do we go with the left-back position? Because Frido isn't going to be healthy for the entire duration of the season. She's going to be undergoing surgery. So it's just all these things that I guess, bother me, because it just seems like there's no foresight. There's no planning. We're not really, for what I know, we're not rumored to sign any world-class left backs. You know, Bacha isn't coming. Karchawi isn't coming, even though I don't rate her very highly. No one's coming. So I don't really know what we do about that. And there's a good chance that we're going to stick with bronze for another season, when we can and should be setting our sights a lot higher than that. That's my thoughts on those two leaving, but also Emma. Do you guys have any thoughts or feelings about Emma's departure?
Yeah, I was actually going to comment on the comments that you made, rather than, I mean, like, Emma had a great season at Real Sociedad, and I wouldn't be able to explain why she came back once Lucy Browns was announced as a Barcelona player, because she had no room. And I don't know, with young players, it feels like it is always the most beneficial for both parties to have continuity. And that's probably why Esther Laborde left. I mean, I can develop on that, but to be honest, I think the club is betting on the fact that Rolfo will miss like 1 month, because he will get with an arthroscopy or any kind of surgery that it takes just 1 month to recover, like the one that Lucy got before the the Champions League final. And I think they are betting on that, and they are playing Ona on the left. And I think probably there is some kind of management of the squad. Like, probably you can have Lucy Brown as a backup, as a rotation player. Like, probably she will demand some minutes, right? And I think probably it's other of the reasons why we are not getting any kind of fullback, or especially on the left. So yeah, I think mostly, yeah.
Yeah, and we have the all-position player in Anamaya Chernogorchevich, who could play there. So yeah, I kind of feel it's so funny that Barca are trying to bet down, like, out of players who happen to play in out of position, and it's kind of funny. And if we think about Esther Laborde joining Madrid CF, we do have the buyback class, so I kind of think that's a good move for a promising player to go to a first division team and play and experience it there, so you could be mentally prepared when Barca gets back there. We have seen Ona Bache going to Madrid CFF before becoming who she is today. So yeah, I think Esther has that potential and she could return back. I kind of feel that's a good move from Barca.
Yeah, that's actually was what I was about to say about we have the experience with Ona. Anyway, I think, I mean, for sure, Esther Laborde, for her, Barca B was already like, she's been done with that. Like, spending one more year on the second Spanish division would be like a waste of time and a waste of everything. So, I mean, like, as I said, the best for young players is to have some continuity and gain the maximum of minutes. And in the case of Esther, like, I really love her. I really love her on the ball. But to be honest, she's missing like one or two steps conditionally, like physically. Like, I mean, if anyone has watched Esther at Alaves against some first division wingers, she suffered tracking back and everything. I don't know in which positions she will play at Madrid CFF. She's always said that she wanted to be, she felt more attached to the center back position rather than playing as a right back. So we will see how she develops on that. But I mean, we kind of so as well, and in the under 20 World Cup, like, she suffered a lot against Brazilian wingers and other wingers which are like really fast. So yes, some room for improvement then. And yeah, I mean, I think the buyback clause is really great, because if CA has that continuity, she keeps developing, you can get her back. And yeah, it's probably the best for both parties, because if she stayed in Barcelona first team, it would be probably not the same as Esther Laborde, but she would have the playtime that she needs at the moment.
About Esther, I honestly, if I were to choose like any of our players to go on loan or like sign with a buyback clause and be developed at any club, I would choose Madrid CFF. Or like Real Sociedad, Madrid CFF, or like Levante. I think all of those clubs are great clubs. So I'm very happy that she went there specifically, because, I mean, you've seen players completely transform themselves from, you know, not having that one small step and then just exploding onto the scene. You saw it with Kunda Naji, you saw it with Jace, some other players that I can't think of right now. But yeah, I do really like that. The Esther coming to Madrid CFF and finally getting continuity in like one of the better Liga FA sides. In addition to Esther leaving, who I would say she was a B team transfer. Ari Mingueza, she has officially departed the club to Granada alongside Ornella Vignola. Ornella was, for me, this was interesting because I remember watching her like 2-3-ish years ago, and I thought she had a lot of potential, but I guess over the past couple of years watching her, she seemed less confident. Her development kind of stagnated. I don't quite know what that's about and how her career trajectory went, but she is currently with Ari Mingueza at newly promoted Granada CF. So probably a good move for both of them, because I don't think that they necessarily had a future in the senior team.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah. And actually, like, I think we have mentioned it as quite a lot of times, the path to the first team is not going directly from Barça B to the Barça first team. Like, that's the only path for like very, 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 very talented players like Aitana. I don't know, probably Jana and Bruna have not consolidated yet, but even Pina had to go on alone to Sevilla. And Ona is coming back after being on other clubs. So in the end, there is no one way to go to being promoted to Barcelona first team. Probably, I don't think neither Ari nor Ornella will come back, but we will see. I agree with everything you said about Ornella, and also the loan decisions that she and the club took were not that wise, because in Sevilla, she didn't have that much playtime, and in Alaves, it was kind of in the same way. So yeah, hopefully in Granada, she finds a place and starts building from that point.
Yeah, so like Sevilla and Alaves especially was just kind of sucked. Just I can't really get on board with the idea of shipping off our kids to play for relegation teams, especially in relegation teams that are struggling defensively. Because that's where Esther was, if I'm not mistaken, right? She was in Alaves.
Yeah, she was, but she got like way more playtime because she was kind of fundamental as a center back on the right. So, but yeah, Ornella didn't get to have that much continuity.
And then just wrapping up the B team news, Maria Perez has been promoted to the senior team, so she's officially part of the senior team squad. And the B team also has had a sizable amount of incoming arrivals. So just going off the list, Onyeka Gamero, she is a Spanish-Nigerian-American international. If I'm not mistaken, she played with the U.S. Women's National Team in the U-17 Women's World Cup. And then Norwegian Martina Finger. How do we say it? I forget. We rehearsed this before recording. What was it? The Norwegian kid?
Oh, God. I don't remember, actually. It was like Martina. I remember that it's Martina.
Lee's finger.
Well, I don't know. I'm sorry.
I don't know.
Fenja. Oh. I don't know. Martina Fenja. Kind of in that way. I'm sorry. I mean, if any Norwegian out part of the Aryans, you can like send us
an angry voice message.
Message with the pronunciation. Absolutely, yeah, that as well.
And then Polish kid, this is going to be drum roll, please. This is going to be the hardest one. Emilka Szymczak. We also rehearsed that one for like a good 3 minutes. Emilka Szymczak, Polish kid. If you couldn't tell. And then two Spanish kids. I'm pretty sure they're Spanish. They sound like it. Adriana Parada and Emma Martin. Parada, I don't know where she comes from, but Martin comes from Eibar. She played there in this previous season. So that's everything with the B team, pretty much. Yeah.
Kelsey, I got the Polish names. The Polish players' name. It's
Szymczak.
Sorry. Yeah, it's Emilia Szymczak.
Okay. So I was mostly right, I think, with pronouncing that. Emilka Szymczak. Commentators, take note. Just saying. I don't want to hear any mispronunciations of this name. Because Google, if you put like a last name in a language into Google voice to text, or text to voice, or whatever, text to speech, it will give you most of the time the accurate pronunciation. So I don't want to hear any. If she gets promoted to the senior team, DAZN, listen, you especially, I don't want to hear any mispronunciations. Okay. Emilia Szymczak. Yep. Just over and over. Burn into your brain. Okay. So now that we're done with senior and B team transfer news, I guess we will move on to talking about the World Cup, and I'm apprehensive to talk about it, as you can tell from my voice, because it is currently the morning of the 12th of August. Well, the morning, I guess it's like the afternoon and night for you guys, but it is August the 12th, and it has been one of the more challenging 48 hours of football in my entire life. England just eliminated Colombia, which was like the team I was supporting the most after Brazil got eliminated. And then Australia eliminated France, which I really didn't care about. And then before that, the day before, Spain eliminated the Dutch and Sweden eliminated Japan. So pretty much every team that I was rooting for in the quarterfinals was defeated. So yeah, I'm a little bitter about it. But we haven't talked about the World Cup pretty much at all. We've been very busy. I've been traveling. We've also been a little sick. They've been working. They've been doing stuff. So that's pretty much what the bulk of the rest of this podcast is going to be about. We had, if I counted right, 18 internationals. Oshuala with Nigeria. Giulia Dragoni, the B team Italian player, with Italy. Caroline Graham Hansen and Ingrid Engen with Norway. AMC with Switzerland. Rolfa with Sweden. Walsh and Bronze with England. Alexia, Irene, Mariona, Catalaya, Aitana, Salma, Ona, and Maria Perez with Spain. And Jaysa with Brazil. Of those players, Oshuala, Dragoni, CGH, Engen, AMC, and Jaysa have been eliminated because Sweden, England, and Spain are all left in the tournament. So I guess we can just go down the line and talk about those specific players and maybe their performances with their teams. We haven't really made a structure to this. I guess we'll just talk about whatever we feel like talking about in relation to those players. So I guess we can talk about the team that was eliminated first, which is Italy, if I'm not mistaken. Dragoni, I only watched one or two of their matches, but she was definitely Italy's breakout kind of standout player. As far as I know, she's only 16. Right? She's still 16. Italy were eliminated in the group stage, but she was definitely one of their like more shining kind of stars. They struggled in pretty much every area defensively, goal scoring. They weren't terrible. They were inches away even from qualifying for the knockout round, but were eliminated by South Africa, who had a really good tournament, actually. I was very pleasantly surprised by that. But yeah, that's Julia Dragoni. Any thoughts?
She wasn't bad or anything. Actually, she was kind of quite okay, but I think it didn't help. I mean, actually, she was playing more as a number 10, not probably as a false winger of or a number, I don't know, 8, 10, and within, like she does with Barça Femení. But I think that didn't help her how Italy plays. Like, there is not that much continuity in her in their possessions. And yeah, in the end, Italy just, I don't want to say that they suck, but they were way...
They kind of did. We can
they
be
were,
honest.
They were not good. Just leave it in that way. I just want to be polite. They were just not good. So in the end, I mean, when you play for a team that doesn't seem like very... I mean, there were some differences with... I just forgot the name of the manager.
I think Italy had their own share of troubles because none of the players from Juventus were picked. Something like that, right?
Is that what happened?
I mean, not...
I was wondering why their big-name players weren't
like
there.
Most of the...
I mean, after the World Cup, like, they sent like a public letter against Milena Bartoli, which is the name of the manager that I couldn't recall, they remember, and that they were not happy, they wanted some change and so on, like pretty much every women's national team, right? But yeah, I mean, but in the end, yeah, the team didn't seem like cohesive, and the end is, yes, you just watched the games and it was like very chaotic on the ball sometimes. And yeah, I don't think that helped Julia. I mean, like she was like, she provided the energy to the team. She provided some interesting things on the ball. But in the end, it's not what you expect from a number 10 in the World Cup. And so in the end, it's like she was like way too young. I mean, I think it was still way too soon for her to make a difference. But yeah, anyway, probably Italy just wanted to introduce the new talent because in the end, Cantore also was played some matches. Julia Dragoni started all of the games and played quite a few minutes. I think there is not that much to highlight from Italy. To be
I
honest.
Did see a lot of Italian fans complaining that she was basically like thrown to the wolves, and I can't say that I disagree. I did look it up. She is 16. She turned 17 in November, so she's not even like turning 17. She's still very much a 16-year-old. And to put her in a position to start all of their matches and play the 90 minutes of pretty much all of their matches. Well, except for the Sweden game where she was taken out, but they lost by 5, so that's kind of merciful, I guess. But yeah, she was kind of not put in a position to succeed, especially given the quality or lack thereof of the Italy team that was selected compared to what it could have been. Next up, the team that I was supporting this whole time, whose exit was extremely heartbreaking, Brazil, specifically Jace's Brazil. Jace, she started off her tournament pretty well. She didn't start against Panama in their opening game, but she did come on as a substitute and record an assist. And after that, she, like, in that match specifically, I think she was sufficient. But in the next match against France, she was really bad. I did not watch that because I was too sad to. But I was told that she had what the kids call a disaster class. I don't really like to go off of FOTMOB rankings, but she had a 5.3, which is pretty catastrophic for a forward. What does it say that she did? Dispossessed 4 times, 0 shots, 0 chances created. Oh boy. 1 out of 12 ground duels won, 2 fouls committed. That's bad. And then in the following match, Brazil tied 0-0 with Jamaica and were eliminated. And it was very sad because it was the end of Marta's national team career, probably the end of Tamita's national team career, blah, blah, blah. Not a very good way for Jace to exit, especially after the year that she's had. And it's pretty known now that she has been struggling mentally with, you know, getting adjusted to Barcelona, and she just hasn't had a very good footballing year on a personal level. So if you guys want to talk a little bit more about Jason, her performances, and specifically what made them so poor, especially the France one, I'd love to hear about that.
And it seems like Brazil struggled a lot on the ball during the whole tournament. So, I mean, Jace is a forward that might be comfortable with doing movements and not playing that much on the ball. But I think I think overall, most of the national teams that didn't have some quality or could make any difference on the ball suffer a lot against these kind of teams like Jamaica, who could sit on a low block and make transitions. And it kind of goes in the same way for France, although it's in a different way, because France like had like a proper block, defensive block. And it seems like Brazil never had the tools to overcome that kind of defensive block. And probably the strikers are the ones that struggle the most. Because, I mean, Marta in the last game, even De Viña didn't have a good game. I think it was overall mostly about the context rather than something in particular with Gaze, because actually we saw Gaze on the friendlies, for instance, against Germany, doing pretty great. So I think it was just a context thing rather than something individual on Gaze.
All right. I would like to move on from Brazil because it does make me sad. Unless, Rajesh, you want to say something else.
Yeah, I just want to ask you guys a question. Like, do you think there will be more rumors regarding Gaze leaving Barca? Like, we had some kind of rumors that Manchester United were interested in Gaze before the World Cup. Do you think that there might be more talks about it after the World Cup?
I think we give her another year. That, if I had to guess, I feel like that would be the direction that we go. Because everything that happened with Jace that I feel like made her lose her confidence was based in, like, just poor circumstance. And, you know, the Copa del Arena thing was, that sucked. I mean, it was completely avoidable. It was stupid. It sucked. I would hope the club would give her a fresh chance to be able to prove herself again. Because I feel like we've forgotten, or like a lot of people in the fan base have forgotten, that she was a Pichichi winner a season ago. She was at Madrid CFF putting up 25 goals in a season. Which is, for a team like Madrid CFF, no hate to them, but like that, those are incredible numbers to put up when you have, you know, like, who's there? Bonsegundo. I mean, no hate to Bonsegundo, I love her, but like, she's not Patri, she's not Aitana, she's not Alexia, you know what I'm saying? So, I think it would be a good idea for us to give her another chance. Realistically, do I think she will end up succeeding here? Probably not. But I would like it if she was able to exceed my expectations and perhaps regain some of that form that she lost over the past season. But that's all we'll talk about Jace for now, I guess. So we're still going in order of who was eliminated first. So after that, those are the only two group stage exits that we had. After that is Switzerland. And I gotta say, I have such a bone to pick with Switzerland. They were put into Group A, which was, I would say, easily the worst group out of any of the groups of the Women's World Cup. Group A had Switzerland, Norway, New Zealand, and the Philippines. Norway were a disaster. New Zealand had never won a Women's World Cup match before this tournament. And then they only won one in their group. Despite qualifying for every single Women's World Cup edition since 2007, but I digress. And the Philippines, who, with all due respect to the Philippines, were a debutante, are not one of the best teams in Asia, probably aren't even a top four team in Asia. So Switzerland topped their group pretty easily. They had two goalless draws and a 2-0 win against the Philippines with goals from Beckman and a penalty. And someone named, oh, I'm not even going to try and pronounce that name, Pubel? P-I-U-B-E-L? So sorry to that woman if I just destroyed the pronunciation of your name. Was not expecting to mention that woman's name today. But they went into the knockout stages as the winners of Group A, despite playing some of the most boring football I've ever had the displeasure of sitting through in my entire life. And what happened when they met Spain in the knockout stages? They got smacked 5-1. They got obliterated. The one goal that they scored was an own goal from Laia Codina, which could honestly be considered a goal of the season contender, or a goal of the tournament contender. AMC herself, I don't know. I mean, what did she do? Was she good? I don't know. I didn't bother to watch Switzerland, because who would watch Switzerland if you're not Swiss? Come on now.
I think she was okay. Like, just on a different version to what we watched at Barcelona, but in the end, yeah, mostly playing as the nine and, yeah, providing all the movements and all the context for players like Backman and so on. In the end, it's pretty much what we mentioned about cases, like the context, what makes a difference. I mean, Chernogorce is not any kind of striker that is self-dependent and can make a difference. So in order for her to sign, she has, it has to be more of a collective thing. In the end, it's just Switzerland just doesn't have the quality. Even some players are not fully professional. So in the end, it's, yeah, what can you expect? But in the end, I think Anna Marie was, pretty decent, quite okay.
I would say that's how she usually performs, right?
That's
pretty
what,
decent, quite okay.
But in the end, in Barcelona, she's more of on a different role. So in Switzerland, she has to be more decisive and more, I don't know, to make a difference, and not from a goals perspective, but I think she kind of made, I would say. I don't know. It's hard when your partners are players,
right?
Like Elisa Lima,
like when,
right?
Your star,
like,
player is, yeah, I don't know. They did not move me in any way, shape, or form. Speaking of another team that did not move me, Norway were the next team of ours with internationals to be eliminated. Norway did pretty much the same thing, at least for the first two matches of their of the tournament. They opened by losing 1-0 to New Zealand, who, again, might I remind you people, had never won a Women's World Cup, or I'm pretty sure not even an Olympics match, before ever. Not even before, no, before this tournament, despite qualifying for every single one as the lone OFC team since 2007. I'm just going to say that. Norway lost to that team. That Norway gave them the only win that they had ever had. Engen was blamed for a lot, as she usually is when it comes to this sort of thing. And then after that happened, a lot of stuff came out against their coach, whose name I also don't know how to pronounce. But a whole thing happened where Kato said some things to the media. And then Norway's coach I'm pretty sure this is what happened. Norway's coach made her hold a press conference to publicly apologize for her statement, stood behind her, like, and it looked like Kato had a gun to her head and was like, sorry, it was like forced to be, to say these things. It was so weird. She did not have a great time. And for the next match after that New Zealand match, she was benched. They drew to Switzerland. She and Engen were benched, actually, and they drew to Switzerland. And then they came back afterwards. Maybe I got the timeline wrong, I don't know. But they came back afterwards on the brink of elimination and won 6-0 against the Philippines. Kato scored a goal in that match. Engen was benched again. And then they made it to the knockouts, where they faced Japan. Poor Engen scored an own goal, the first goal of the game. And then Norway were eventually knocked out by Japan, who by that point had looked like they were title contenders, and then they were knocked out by Sweden. So, I'm going to be so honest, I didn't watch a single Norway game. And I'm like so glad that I did.
And in the middle of these things, Caro was asked to apologize to the teammates for speaking the truth.
She was punished. Borja, Rajesh, anything?
Yeah, unfortunately, I watched all the games of Norway. My bad. I think I could very much say what I mentioned about Geise, about the context and so on. But in the case of these kind of small countries where the skill set, the talent is very skewed, very concentrated on several players, I think it requires even better management. Like we usually ask about having a better tactical staff within women's teams, right? But I think with these kind of small nations where you just have very concrete profile of players, you just need someone to manage it and to find an equilibrium within the team. And I think that, for instance, I think Engen didn't deserve much of the blame that she was. In the first match. I mean, like, we already know that Engen delivers way more on a double pivot because of her profile as a player. And when, Norway were losing, but when when Boerissa came in and was on a double pivot with Engen, they kind of got better. Then we saw Engen being benched. I think she didn't deserve it. I think it was mostly the rating man on interiors. I mean, I think it doesn't work that much. It was very striking to see how very few teams Kato was found on the wing on 1v1 situation, which is probably the best context for Norway, considering that they have very, very good strikers attacking the box, and that you have probably the best winger on 1v1s. And it's striking that they didn't find her in those situations. So it's just how you, as a manager, don't provide that context to your team. So it's, I think in the end, I mean, we can talk about the Caro being salty. Probably you could argue that probably she shouldn't have done that, going to the media and publicly airing that. And I could in some way agree on that. But in the end, it's just, again, not having the best kind of manager and tactical talent within the staff to provide the best context for the players. So in the end, that's the best way to summary the Norwegian journey through the World Cup. I think they have some deficiencies on defense, and on the midfield they will gain a lot from a certain kind of profiles. I don't know if Mappy can be nationalized Norwegian, but that would be interesting to watch. But yeah, in the end, it's just, yeah, they don't have the best context for the A to sign. And yeah, it's unfortunately that the best pool of talent from Norway will go away with not any kind of impact on the World Cup. You could say the Australia-Norway game back in 2019 was kind of good.
That's probably where they peaked as a national team. Because I do remember watching that game. It was the first time I ever really saw CGH like play ever. Granted, she had, you know, been at Wolfsburg for a while, but she had been injured for like half of her time there. It was, yeah. But I remember watching that and thinking, like, you know, maybe Norway are next up. And once they get Ada back, if they even do, because she was still on protest by that point, if they ever get Ada back, then they could be something serious. But it's not a personnel issue. It's not, you know, one player individually performing better for club, for country, or whatever. It is absolutely a federation issue that extends to a coaching issue that makes the entire environment toxic and just bad to be in. And from that perspective, it's like, how do you even fix that? Because we've seen, and, you know, Spain, France, Nigeria, Brazil, even the United States, like pretty much every major national team has in some way or another screwed up or like screwed over their golden generation, whatever that may be. Norway currently has one. They're currently in the midst of their probably one of their best ever generations. I don't want to say the best because obviously they've won a World Cup before, but
and an Olympic.
Did they have an Olympic gold medal?
Maybe
too?
I think so. It was the coach who won that. So she has that power, maybe. And I guess kind of the like downfall started when they lost 7-0 to Netherlands, and they haven't been the same since. Like maybe that.
Yeah, that was a disaster. I remember that.
Yeah, they don't have a good feeling going back to the national team. It could be a reason. And like something similar happened in 2019 when Ada left the national team, citing the national team management as the issues. I'm wondering if she will do the same because it's not good now as well.
I hope they all do because maybe, like, especially Kato, because like, we've been able to see, especially at this tournament, up close and personal, how weak. Because that conference, press conference, that was so weird. It literally looked like she was a hostage victim. Like, it was crazy. You had her standing alone at a podium with the Norway coach standing behind her with her hands like behind her back and like a small smile on her face. It looked like a hostage situation. It was crazy. And there's no way that like they're going to succeed with anything like that. at the helm, because you can't go to your national team and be miserable the entire time and be expected to succeed. That is something that, like, French players talked about when they were being coached by Diacre, where it was like, we are miserable our entire time here, and we feel like a pit in our stomach every time we go to the national team. Like, Amandine Henry, like, talked very candidly about feeling that way when going to France. I would be shocked if the Norwegian players didn't feel the exact same way. And that is a structural issue from top to bottom. It doesn't start or begin with coaching. It is clearly a problem because it happened in 2017 at the 2017 Euros. They crashed out in the group stages. It was a little better for 2019. They were probably carried by, you know, their individual quality. And then we saw what happened last year, where they were just demolished by England, and they did it again, where they were demolished by Spain. Or not by Spain. By Japan. But even besides the Japan loss, they were still, like, at risk of not even qualifying for the round of 16 in the easiest group of the entire tournament. So, I think it goes a lot far beyond just firing the coach, because that's what they did last time, and obviously nothing changed, really. I think it's a thing that they need to change with their federation, whatever that may be. I don't know. I'm not, like, an insider into the Norwegian national team, but something is very structurally wrong there, and it doesn't really, you don't have to deduct much to see that. Nigeria are our next team to talk about. They were not expected to do much. They went into this tournament basically at war with their federation, hadn't been paid in years, similar to Zambia and similar to South Africa, where they had not been paid their bonuses. They were expected to protest their first match of the group stage against Canada, but they did not do that. Instead, they played Canada to a draw and had sort of like a fairy tale tournament for pretty much all of the group stage. They won 3-2 against Australia. And Oshoala scored Nigeria's third goal and what would end up being their game-winning goal. Her tournament specifically was not amazing. I'm pretty sure she started on the bench more often than no. She started, but she was subbed out, I think, in two of the matches that she played, and then she was played as a substitute in the Australia match. But she only did score one goal. against England, she struggled, and comparatively, Nigeria's forward, like Ajibade and Tony Payne and Kanu and not so much Onumanu, but even Gift Monday, I think they all performed better than her. So, again, Oshoala wasn't amazing with Nigeria, but she got the job done when they needed her to against Australia, and I would say that goal gave them hope. If I'm not mistaken, she became either the first Nigerian or the first African player to score in three different World Cups, 2015, 2019, and 2023. So good for her, Slay. But yeah, Nigeria were eventually knocked out on penalties against England, which destroyed me personally. But that's just how the game goes. Do you guys have anything to say about Oshoala's performances with Nigeria?
Yeah, it remains the question of how much she was conditioned by her injury during the last part of the season with Barcelona. I mean,
right, that is
we don't
true.
Know to which extent. I mean, we don't even know what kind of injury it was, so probably she was taken care of. yeah, as you mentioned, she had some impact against Canada. I don't recall which through the goal the C score.
Australia.
Yeah, it was against Australia. Sorry, Australia. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, she had the impact. I mean, yeah, you can ask for more. I mean, like, I really like Nayuri's setup. Defensively, she was exceptional. There is a piece on FIFA training set there which they dig into it, and yeah, it was pretty good. I really like Tony Payne as well. But in the end, you don't always need to place your best players on the pitch on the starting 11. Sometimes you just want to save one of them to make an impact like she had against Australia. So yeah, I'm just happy that she didn't got injured, because usually during the last two seasons, anytime Australia went to the national team, she got injured and she's been struggling. I mean, we know Nigeria, all the problems that they don't get paid, the problems with having a campman before the World Cup. But I think especially Australia has had some issues with the management or the federation or whatever, because she's been absent from some collapse, right?
That's a whole story. So,
yeah,
it's a whole thing. She had,
But in the end, my point is that that makes even better the tournament that Nigeria did, and Australia in particular.
Yeah, I don't want to say that they underperformed at all, because as a collective, they absolutely overperformed. I mean, if we're just being realistic about their situation, I don't think it's fair to expect any team or any squad that's under that amount of pressure and stress from not being paid and having a federation that is like bold and shameless about not respecting them, so much so that they want to protest their first match, which would basically guarantee them like not going through to the knockout rounds. I mean, I don't think it's fair to expect any of those teams that are under that situation to succeed. And that goes for literally any national team that you can think of that has been going through anything similar. Zambia were really, really poor at this tournament because probably that exact reason, plus the allegations against their coach. I was also expecting a similar kind of outcome for South Africa, which again, they also exceeded those issues, or not exceeded, overcame, I should say, those issues. Granted, those are still happening and there's still a problem. But given the circumstances, I think Nigeria played very well. And they also had a lot of standout performance that we might touch on later. But I believe that's every team other than the ones that are currently still in the competition. So right now, Sweden are going to play Spain in the semifinals, and England are going to be playing Australia in the other set of semifinals. How much do we want to talk about Sweden, England, and Spain? Because we can talk about Spain. I have watched England games against my will, mostly because they've been against teams that I love deeply. And the only Sweden match I watched was the penalty shootout against the United States. So how much are we wanting to tackle all those?
I mean, we can leave it for a future podcast, considering that they are both semifinalists. I mean, all of them are on the semifinals. And we'll probably have to watch two more games from them. I'm not enjoying that much any of them. We'll talk.
You're not excited to watch
Sweden,
Spain play Sweden? You're crazy.
I'm excited for Rolfo Trust.
Don't say that.
I'm sorry, I'm jinxing.
I'm going to provide my jinx now, like giving the predictions. England versus Spain, and Spain winning the cup. Yeah. It's easy and simple.
I tweeted this, but if it comes down to it and we do get an England versus Spain final, I'm not watching it. I'm just not going to watch it. I'm going to protect my peace. Maybe I'll like put on Champions League final rewatch or whatever. And I'm not doing it. I'm simply just not going to. That's like my worst nightmare. Why would I participate? Who am I rooting for? No one. I'm rooting for I'm rooting for it to be over.
Yeah, wait. No. No. That's interesting. Thank you, Reyes. Kelsey, if Spain and England get to the final,
if which I had one a gun to my head, to... pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Genuinely, oh my god!
Come on, but in the end, I mean, I know that you dislike a lot Lucy Burns. I'm fully aware of that.
I would support England,
but in the end, the English Federation is, yeah, it's kind of, I wouldn't say cool, but they are doing a good job. Like, particularly, I'm not very moved by the England team. Actually, I think they're playing like really bad.
They are really very, bad, they very are, like, lucky to be getting away with what they're getting away with. Very lucky. In my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Serena has made some changes, especially due to Kira.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to say that. To apparently Kira.
We didn't even talk about
breaking
that.
ACL, which,
I feel like that's really important for us to talk about, even if it's not like we're not talking about England. Kira, we all collectively thought that Kira Walsh tore her ACL completely. And you want to know why? It's because she went down and she was caught, like, saying, people could read her lips. She said, "I did my knee." What else are we supposed to think? And then she was like...
Her facial expression was like,
she knew something was wrong.
She
knew there was something wrong there. And then she starts England's like against Nigeria. And we're like, what? And then she gives an interview later. What did you say? And she played all 120 minutes. Every single one of them. Because England did go out. Virgin slip. Nigeria did go out to England on a penalty shootout, which Nigeria were really bad. I didn't know this until my African friend told me, but African teams are like notoriously bad at penalty shootouts, which I was not aware of. But she played all 120 minutes and then later gave an interview and was like, "Yeah, I didn't actually do my knee. I thought it was a lot worse than what it actually was. I feel kind of stupid now." Okay. All right.
And Lauren James got the red card. I mean, like, do you want to talk about that red card that Lauren James got against?
Do we? I mean, let's entertain it for a minute. Lauren James got a 2-match suspension for stepping on the back of Nigeria's right back, whose name I hope I'm pronouncing right, Alozie. I don't know. Because I'm not going to depend on the Telemundo commentators to be pronouncing it correctly. Sorry. Lauren James stepped on her back and got a 2-match suspension. A lot of people were very upset that it was not a 3-match suspension. It was very much intentional. I don't know what she was thinking. That was so crazy. Because I woke up like just as that red card happened. It was a direct red card, by the way. I'm not just saying this because I despise England. But it probably should have been a 3-match ban. Because a Nigeria player was given a 3-match ban, ended her tournament for a very bad but unintentional tackle against Ashley Lawrence in the group stage. When you're talking about something that's deliberate, and is not just deliberate, but like so disrespectful, so insanely disrespectful to step on someone when they're down. Oh my god. Her tournament should be over. You can't do that. But that's how I feel about it. I don't know. I feel like I'm just saying, if she was African, she played for an African team or a South American team, she played for Colombia, it would be 3-match suspension, non-issue. But that's all I'm going to say. Or Josh, do you have any thoughts and feelings because you brought it up?
I just want you to talk about it. So
well, that's my thoughts and feelings about the LJ situation. That was really stupid. You can't do that in the World Cup. You just can't do that. Or, like, at all. But, like, if you're going to do it, don't do it at a World Cup. Are you crazy? Anyway.
Do it in a World Cup final. Like, isn't it?
No, literally. Like, if you're going to do it, like, go out with a bang. You know what I mean? Man, that was crazy. Waking up to that was crazy. She lost her head. You just can't do that. I guess, do we want to leave off with, like, our players to watch, or maybe some signings that Barcelona is or should be looking at, or should we just save that for the next one after the tournament's over? I think we should.
It's over 1 hour, so we should leave it for a future podcast, right? Actually, I don't know if we have any names besides, I don't know, Esme Brooks, just because she said that Barcelona is her final destination. Ooh, or something like that.
Interesting.
Did you read that? Okay. No, it was just basically that back in 2022, she said that she was already learning Spanish and that her final destination was Barcelona. Like,
I like her.
It's a shame that she didn't.
That she's La Buasa.
Interesting.
Except Flicky, maybe.
I will take her over Jill Roard any day of my life. Any day. Any day. Okay, that's interesting. I like her. She, personally, she's been my player of the tournament for the Dutch in both the Euros and the World Cup. I think she's been great. Okay. So we can talk about that in the next one. Otherwise, I think we're good. I don't think there's anything much else to talk about. To answer your question, if I had to, I would support England. If I, like, quite literally had a gun to my head and was, like, threatened by someone and asked, who do you support, I would go with England over Spain. I can't tell you.
I'm going to block
you.
What'd
you say? I'm sorry. Look,
I hate you then.
Look.
I prefer Spain in this case. I'm sorry for that.
Brijesh, my beloved Indian friend, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I know. But I have, like, I'm not joking when I say this. I have made myself physically ill, like, drafting an article about the Spain situation. I can't tell you how deeply I hate that federation. It goes, like, into my bones. The whole Spain national team thing or whatever made me, like, mentally check out from women's football for, like, months last year. I would turn into a full-on nihilist if Spain won, which is a possibility. So, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to be once this podcast comes back. So brace yourselves, everyone. Brace yourself. It might not be pretty.
Kelsey, just think about, I mean, just imagine this, like, Spain winning the World Cup and Ivana Andres winning the World Cup. That would be a great thing.
Oh my god, wouldn't she?
That would be crazy.
Who's England's captain right now? Who is her captain?
I suppose Millie Bright.
Yeah, gosh. I was actually thinking the same.
It's really fucking bright. Yeah, I guess. Again, gone to my situation.
I'm sorry. Like, I'm picking England now. Like, I can't.
That's what made you change your mind?
Yeah, definitely. Like,
oh my god. That would be awful.
Accepting that World Cup. Or maybe Olga Carmona. She's the second captain, I suppose.
I can't think about this right now. Please, I just... To every god... I beg of you. I can't. A Spain-England final would I think would, like, make me have a crisis. I don't know what I'd do. I would be in the middle of, like, having a crisis and being so completely emotionally and mentally removed that it would just not touch me at all. One or the other. Not sure. Okay. And on that note, on that terrible, awful note... awful, disgusting, abhorrent note.
Imagination. Yes.
On that fan fiction scenario, we leave you with a goodbye. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for listening.